Today's Duff is Duff Your Tet. And last year and this year, we started even before that, was discussing a TAM that caused multiple damage in sequence, one after the other. And we saw that really three or potentially four different understandings or positions, well, let's call it three positions in terms of how to understand the relationship between the person who caused the damage and the subsequent people that the ox damaged in terms of compensation. Okay. Now, and Rabbi Shimon's opinion was as soon as they do damage, they become effectively the Mazik and the Nizak become partners in it. That was why I explained it. And then from that point on, was they're both responsible for the damage. So the next person to get damaged gets half, and the owner and the first person who was damaged gets, well, a quarter each, and it continues dividing in that pattern. That's why the Mishnah says now, or Gemara says now, Tamantanina achronot tel maneh, meaning the last person, the third in the chain, will get a maneh, shelavanav gets 50 zuz, v'shnayim rishonim, meaning the owner and the first thing got damaged, got dinar ezahav, which is 25. So it sounds like they have a different partnership in it. So Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Shmuel says b'shem Reb Zira, the cheneschar, also for schar as well, meaning they're now joint owners in schar, and they're the benefit which they get in schar. Now, according to the Marfulda, he explains schar differently to the way we learned it last year, which is if it increases in value. However, Reb Chaim, when we learned this back in Ketubot, says also, like we explained it before, that if it was rented out. Meaning, if this animal, they're all effectively joint owners in this. If it's rented out, then they'll share evenly. The last person gets damaged, gets 50%, etc., etc. Not evenly, sorry, proportional. Okay, chenaschar. However, Amar Reb Yossi hadad Reb Zira pligi al de Reb Elazar. This seems to be against the position of Reb Elazar. Why? Because that was regarding the three people that were matil lekis. If this is back in Ketubot, if people contribute into sort of a pool of funds, okay. And there, Reb Elazar says, I'll just show you actually my folder, so I've got something to follow along with. It says, this is the Bril Matka that hadad Reb Elazar pligi, sorry, hadad Reb Zeira pligi al or ab Rebbe Elazar. So Reb Elazar mafarshatam the Mishnah Ketubot, the gimu shetilakis, feotiro pachatu. Then it goes like increased or decreased. Kachem cholkim, which seems to suggest that they would also divide proportional to the contributions. Okay. However, Mefarsh Rabbah says no. Hay pachatu love b'schar v'hefzer. It's not talking about the profits or losses as a result of the contribution system sort of project. That is divided evenly, like we explained the debate before, if you like. Ella b'shaita haselach hasera. What was the Mishnah about there that they split the increase or decrease in actual like proportional to their contributions? That's regarding if the coins themselves become more fluid or less fluid or more acceptable, like a currency changes. Let's call it that. That's when you look. Kevin jachasera hitil notel lefimashitil lekis vagamiyatera. In other words, then in that situation, the actual physical items that are there have changed in value. So therefore, you take according to proportion to contributions. However, any forward business activity, if you like, with those funds will be split evenly. So therefore, what we're trying to say now is Reb Ze'ira is not like Shit Reb Elazar. Let's go fold this back into our sugya. Our sugya is talking about where they're effectively joint owners in this shore. Reb Ze'ira says, any, if you like, schar, let's look at Reb Chaim's explanation that any say, if it's rented out, they would split it evenly. How Reb Elazar says, if this is a joint business venture, it doesn't matter how much they contributed, they should share the profits evenly. So you can see that it's a that's what trying to suggest it's a machloket. So Amar Rav Mani Kesheita Kamei Rav Yehuda. This Yehuda seems to be he presented this contradiction or difficulty that Rav Lazira doesn't seem to be like Rav Lazar. And Amar Li Lo Mod Rav Lazar Sheimit No Benehem Shezeno Telafikisov Vezeno. Even the Rav Lazar says Minastam, meaning if they don't say anything that they would split evenly any profits, if they signed a contract or made an agreement in the very beginning that you're only contributing 10%, so you'll only get 10% of the profits. Of course, I can stipulate that. Of course, I can make that arrangement. And that arrangement would hold. So, two, shvarim kemutanim hem. In the case of a tam, it wasn't a let's join up in a business venture. This was minator. It says you get a share, so therefore, the increase, since he can take his, if you like, profits, sorry, he can get his compensation from chetzi min ha'shor from the shore itself. It's like the metunim that any profits or losses will be shared proportionally. Okay, so it's like metunim. So you can even say Reb Elazar would agree in our situation with the shorim that when it comes to cheneschar, it's proportional to I get the way I explained it, the when they were damaged in terms of and the compensation they can take from this from the shore that caused the damage. However, Chazav Amar Kamer Biyosi says actually no. It's not because Amar Leida said him Beferush Peligi Rabbi Lazar. Actually, there's a Beferush, if you like, we've seen that they're cholek in the case of Stam, if you like. Amar Stamah Cholkim B'Shaveh. Rabbi Lazar says Stamah Zenotel Fi Kiso VeZenotel Fi Kiso. Okay, so therefore they're clearly cholek. It sounds like according to the way the Maharal is placing in Ketubot, that it would if it Stam Natala Kis that is. Contributed money to without any stipulation, the Reb Zira would still be cholek on, if you like, cholek on Rebbe Lazar, that, well, it's proportional to your contributions, whereas Rebbe Lazar says in his stam, it's basically, we know, we look at the profits evenly. We split evenly, even if there wasn't even contributions to this pool of funds. Okay, that's it. Now, the next mission is Halachabet. Shor shehu muad lemino ve'enu muad l'she'enu mino. So here we're talking about, for example, to a particular, like it's min and not another type. Of animal, if you like. Or it seems to like attacking people, but not attacking animals. It only would attack small people or creatures, or here, katanim as in young, like children. However, but not for adults, I think that's the understanding here. Mean the concept of being a oh, by the way, ketanim is not children, sorry. Pnei Moshe says ketanim for agalim, like calves versus shorim. So young, a smaller but larger animals. Okay, just to correct that. Beseder. In any event, what Mishnah is saying is you're muad for a particular type, only if that shor does damage that means the type nezek shalem. If he's not muad to another type and he does damage, and we treat it like chatzi nezek. Fine, it's treated like a tam. So you can be a partial muad, partial tam for certain creatures. Amru lifnei Rab Rabbi Yehuda, harei muad b'shabatot ve'enu muad b'matachol. What happens if this ox seems to only do damage and cause ha be a hazard, if you like, on Shabbos? So Amru lehem b'shabatot meshlem nezek shemod b'chol meshlem chatzin nezek. You can have that. I mean, if it attacks another animal or attacks a person on Shabbat, then he would be chayiv to pay nezek shalem. If happened during the week, it would be chatzin nezek. So you can have. So why is that so? We'll get to that soon. Meimatai hu tam. When would it be a tam? Well, not if he doesn't do damage during the week, because it's not a tam during the week. So it has to be Shloshet. It'd have to be three Shabbos, which would be like Shita Rebbe Yehuda, if you remember. It has to be three times. It'd be Chozer LeTamuto. Have to be three Shabbos where he doesn't do damage. Okay, that's the Mishnah Suk of the Gemara now. Shoshu Muad Lemino. Mikem Shreg Adam Echad, Einu Muad. So what are you talking about? How can it possibly be that it's Muad to kill human beings? And not more to, and I would say, one of the cases was more to kill humans and not more to kill animals. But it's impossible because once it kills a human being, what's the law? It's a shor nisgas to be killed. So when you ever get to three, like the Maravulda says, and once he's killed, it's more, how do you ever get it? So Rav Amar, in a situation where they killed three goyim. Okay, and that situation, the animal wouldn't be put to death. That's one understanding. And Rabbi Yossi ben Chanin says no. It doesn't have to kill to be a muad. Even if it just had this attack or charged, if you like, a human being, and it was clear that it had the capacity to kill in that situation, but the person seemed to run away, and happened three times, and the assessment was this ox would have killed the person, then he could be a muad. Interesting. Now the Gemara says. What happens though? Now this piece till pretty much the end of the Amud we saw previously, back in the second Perek, and it says shvarim. And it makes sense because we're talking about being a muad lamin and muad shnolamin, right? So what happens if for the first day it goes and gores an ox? Second day it goes out and gores dogs. Third day it goes out. So again, b'shlishi v'nagach chazirim. And pigs. Shlosha minim. Three different minim, three different days. I mean, and if you remember last time, we left that as a question. Okay. Yatzah baram mishom v'nagach. B'sheni lo yatzah. B'shlishi yatzah. What's the din now? And when it went out, it was nagach. So in this situation, we saw this last time, that the first day it went out of gourd. The second day, you didn't let the ox out. The third day, it gourd. Now, it didn't go out on the second day and act placid. It didn't go out at all. It's possible if you remember, if it hadn't gone out, it was still in this crazy state, it would have gone. So the question is, what's a din? Is it a muad or not? So the Gemara is Yeva Kaplukta, it seems to be like Machlok, we showed Rav Ada Bar Achva, that's Ever Rav Huna. And if you remember, they're both, at the time when we learned this, they both said it in the name of, let me get this right. We'll get to that in a second. Alku Nida Shabbat Katzma Biyom Rishon. This is referring to Nida. Now, if not a Nida, if you remember, this Sugi was referring to actually potentially a Zava. Okay, just a quick recap. Nida is a normal time where a woman sees dam. If she sees dam, she's have to really count, sorry, wait 6 days. As long as she stops seeing dam, then she can go to mikvah and she's fine. This is Doraita, not to confuse with nowadays halacha. However, outside that time, after those 7 days, if she dam in the next 11 days, one day, Shumayom yom. Just as long as she's clean the next day, she goes mikvah, she's fine. If it happens 3 days in a row, then she's what's called a Zava, or Gdola, and then she has to, if you like, Shomer the Sheva Nikiyim. Okay, so the question is, what happens if during those days, Badka Umatzata, Tmea, she checks and sees she's fine, she's so dumb. Vesheni, she didn't do a check at all. Vesheni, Badka, and the third day, she found she checked and she was dumb as well. So it's quite likely, I would even say, that on the second day, had she checked, she would have seen, she got 3 days in a row, she's a Zava. So no matter what's it, but she didn't check, so what's the law? So Rav Ada Bar Achva says, B'shem Rav, Nida, well, really, she's a Zava. The way we explained it, Vada'ai, she's a Vada'i Zava. In other words, we assume we've built enough of a case, if you like, to show she's a Vagmura. And Rav Huna says the name of Rav, the Nida Safek. So here, this is what I've tried to hesitate on before, that it's a machloket what Rav said, whether she's a Vada'i or it's a Nida Misafek. Oh, it's actually, it's called Zava Misafek. So that would be the same thing here as well, whether this ox is considered, if you like, a Muad, Misafek, or Vada'i. So Amar Rav Huna, I was there the entire time. This is Rav Huna saying the name of Rav. If you remember, they asked Rav. Ishtar the Rav, Amar initially said Safik. Ishtar the Rav, they asked him again, Amar Vadai. Chazar Amar Safik. So in other words, his position changed, if you remember. Initially, he said it was a Safik. Then he said, actually, I think it's Vadai, and then he thought it was a Safik. But Rav Ada, who's a Bar Plugta here of Rav Huna, he says that when he, why did he say Vadai, because Rav Ada Bar Achva, if you remember, lo havatamam ella kadamar vadai. He was only there for one episode, the intermediate one when Rav said vadai. He didn't see the full picture, and really, Rav's position at the end of the day was it the Safek. Okay, now the Gemara says Rav Yirmiyah says b'shem Rav hilchot to Rabbi Meir b'tamah uva k'Rabbi Yehuda with the muad the huada. Okay. Now, if you remember, that related to the debate. Now, because this is really a copy paste, let's call it that, copy paste sugya from what we learned previously in the second parak, this relates to machlok in the Mishnah in the second parak, these two lines. So, a good bit of chazara. If you remember, Rabbi Huda says it becomes a muad 3 days in a row if offended, and it comes a tamah for 3 days in a row it doesn't. Okay? If you remember, we also said Rabbi Meir's bal, it was cholek. He says it can even be 3 times in the 1 day. Okay? That's it can be a, become a muad. How does it become a tam? If a tinok comes and starts poking it in, playing with it, and it seems to be unfazed by that. That's how we go back to being a tam. So if you remember, we went into more detail when we saw the sugya last time. But Rav Yirmiyah says that in that rather halachas like we mayor to turn it back to a tam. If a tinok plays with it, that would be enough. If you remember last time, we also said we would agree if it was 3 days in a row, it would also be. However, Rabbi Yehuda says but. Behuda, meaning when it comes to Rabbi Yehuda, how does it become a no, how does it become a muad? That is, if it is 3 days in a row. Okay, now if you remember, we saw Shitre Meir, this is what we discussed last time, that even though he might agree that even if it's 3 days in a row, it kind of a gap. That's what we got. That's the discussion we had when we looked at Mara Fulda. Okay. Said it. We'll leave that for now. You can have a go back to that share if you like. Now, having some remember my time with the Rabbi Huda. What they thought to say, in other words, what is the it's actually here. It says, Lo garsinan la megirsa de la elhi vesham ufurash. Okay, he brings it up further above. Meaning what we're trying to do here is the Marafulda says this is it should be said elsewhere, but this is relating to the position of Rabbi Huda on the Mishnah. If you remember, Rabbi Huda in the Mishnah says you can be a muad for Shabbos and not for weekdays. How so? Says Mekamanda, it says, so my time is so again, let's just so put Havan Sabra Meimar aside, but it says, my time with Rabbi Yehuda. What's the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda? That you could be muad for Shabbos and not during the week, even though it's not 3 days in a row, is it? It's 3 weeks apart. So it says, Mekamandu Chami Lun Levishin Nikim Od Humishane Daite. Amazing. I'll read you the parafolder. He says, "Bishvil shashoro el." In other words, the shore can be influenced by his environment. Shabbos, everyone gets dressed up in nice clothes. Weekdays, people are not. Well, at least then, if you like. In other words, nishtane. That's how he might be, if you like, impacted this ox by the nice fancy clothes, such that he will behave differently on those days. That's why it's possible, if you like, that you can have a muad for specifically Shabbos and not during the week, because those are his triggers, if you like, for whatever reason, but for this shore on Shabbos alone. It's a bit like you have the red things in front of the bull. Like that's a trigger for a bull to go crazy. So it could be of a similar type of idea. Okay. Now the Gemara says, this is the next Mishnah, Halacha Gimel. Shorsh Yisrael Shanagach, Shor Shel Hekdesh. Okay. So a normal ox goes and gores an ox belonging to the base of Mikdash. Or Shel Hekdesh gores Shel Shanagach, Shor Shel Yisrael. Gemara says, Patur. You don't have to pay it all. Shneamar, Shor Re'ehu. What's the pasuk? Let's get the full pasuk. Your ox causes your friend's ox. Well, Beis HaMikdash Hekdesh is not considered Shor Re'ehu. So therefore, whether it's Hekdesh that caused the damage or Hekdesh that was damaged, that does the din of compensation apply, right? V'lo Shor Shel Hekdesh. Now Gemara says, Shor Shel Shanagach Shor Shel Nochri. If your ox causes an, or go, so, causes an ox of a Nochri, then it's Patur. Okay, Shor Re'ehu. Similar pshat. However, shel nochri shenagach shor shel Yisrael bein tam bein mor misham nezek shalem. Now that seems asymmetrical. The Gemara is going to address this, but it seems to be if a nochri gores a ox of an Israel, then you pay, if you like, nezek shalem. Whether even if it's a town, we'll see this in a second. The Gemara now says shor Yisrael shenagach shor shel nochri. The Gemara tries to understand why is it asymmetrical. So the Gemara says Rav Amar ra'a ve'yater goyim. Right of Yeter Goyim, meaning HaKadosh Baruch Hu was Matir, the Mammon of the Goyim. Hetir Mammonam Shel Goyim. Why so? So what did HaKadosh Baruch Hu see? What's Ra'ah? Marapulda says, Ra'ah HaKadosh Baruch Hu She'en Mekayim Sheva Mitzvah Noach. They're not fulfilling the Sheva Mitzvah Noach. It's a here Mammonam Israel. Okay? That's position number one. They've got to do with the fact they weren't keeping Sheva Mitzvah Noach. Therefore, Lefichach Shor She'Yisrael Shemagach Shel Shor Akum is Patur. Where really it should seems to be, it should have been both ways Yichayiv. Okay? That's one understanding. Meaning it wasn't because they were keeping Shiva Mitzvah Noach, it was a knas for a different reason. Meaning, they'll offer the Torah, they turned it down, therefore, take a disknas. Okay. However, Rabbi Aval says, B'Shem Yochanan, no, it's Kedinehem. Now, what does it mean, Kedinehem? Kedinehem, I'll read you according to the different explanations here, but I'll show you the Marfulda. He says, It seems to be that it's got to do with the fact that the differential between Akum and Israel is called Kedinehem. Okay, but I'll just show you the Pnei Moshe. Kedinehem means, meaning the lack of distinction between Tam and Muad is Kedinehem, meaning they don't have distinction in Tam and Muad, so we just apply their laws. Simple as that. However, now the next, well, how you read the continuation of the Gemara depends on how which pshat you just brought. But let's continue. So Amar Ravla, lo al hadi tamar el ahada, meaning the position of what we just saw of Rabbi Yochanan, the Kedinehem is not mentioned on this, but rather on what we'll see in a moment. Datani, Reb Chiya shor shel goy shenagach shor shel goy, acher shechaveru, right? Acher chaveru. So a goy ox got gores another ox of a Jew, so of another Jew, of another goy. So there's a dispute between two goy. Afalpi, even if they come to a Beit Din of Israel and they say, "Look, Afalpi shekibu alem ladun kedin Israel," they say, "Look, we'd like to go according to your judgment," meaning we I don't know, we have an affinity for Jewish laws. We think it's more just, whatever reason, they decide to commit to Jewish law. Okay, bein tam bein mo'ad meshlem. We that's what. Rabbi Yochanan's referring to, because whether it's Tam or Muad, we say, okay, you have to pay Nezek Shalem. Despite the fact that it's not really Din Israel, is it? And now, why is it? Ahadi Tamrit, Rav Aval says, B'Shem Riochan, Kedinehem. Because that, since they don't differentiate, we say, oh, Kedinehem, if you want to go like Kedinehem, well, you don't differentiate with respect to where you're dealing with your thing, so we don't really give them that leniency of Tam. Interesting pshat, even though they wanted to commit to it. Okay, let's say that. Now, based on this asymmetry, you'll see I feel like a famous Maaseh. It's actually mentioned in Sifri. We'll see this in, as well. It's Rishami here. It says, Maaseh Shilach Ma'amalchut Shnei Istaratriot. Meaning, So this is post Churban, they sent two istrategiotes like officers or whatever it is. But the important thing is the Sifri, it says, is they went under the guise to pretend they wanted to convert. So effectively spying on the Jews. This is after the Churban. And it was when the Beit Din was in Usha. That's why the Sifri explains it. Okay? They went to learn Torah from Rabban Gamliel. Vilamdu learned the whole Kol HaTorah Korah. Mikra, Mishnah, Talmud, Halachot, Agadot. They learned the whole lot. But Sof Amru, in the end, they, I guess, pulled off the mask. And they said, you know what? Kol Torah Tchem Na'eh. The whole Torah is beautiful. We love it. The whole thing's amazing. Umushubechat, and it's even praiseworthy. It's fantastic. It's supreme. However, Chut Mishnei Devarim, there's two things we find a little bit hard to swallow. And it's really two groups of two. So two, let's call it, areas of law. Sha'atemorim, first you're saying, Bat Yisrael lo teled l'nochrit, aval nochrit mi'aleh l'bat Yisrael. You say that a Bat Yisrael can't be a midwife to a nochrit. Now, the understanding, by the way, of the Gemara is we're not talking about just simply a nochri, we're talking about Ovede Kochavim, make like an idol worship, because you want to bring more idol worship into the world. Okay. But a nochri, she can be wife in Israel. That's not fair, sounds like. But you still to nikna bana, for the same reason, a bat yisrael cannot feed, if you like, a child of a, as in breastfeed, a child of a nochri. But a nochri can act as the feeder of a bat yisrael, b'rishuta, as long as the Israel is supervising, we're scared because maybe the nochri will kill the child. So next thing, gzeilo shel Yisrael asur v'shel nochri mutar. The theft of a Yisrael is asur, but of a nochri seems to be mutar. Okay, we'll have to get to that in a minute. And at that moment, botosha gazer Rabban Gamliel gzeilo nochri. So at that moment, Rabban Gamliel says, actually, therefore, we're going to make gzeira because of shir asur mishpnich shul Hashem. He says, no, gzeilo nochri is an asur. Now, it's interesting, the Bira Gra, saw this mentioned in Askra, so I looked it up. He says that the Gemara says actually Gezel Goy is actually Asur Midaraisa. There's no need for Gzeira. It's just Rabban Gamliel goes according to that Shita that it is actually Midarabana, but Gezel goes Asur Midaraisa. There's no question there. Okay. But I guess what he taught over to them, there was an asymmetry. And finally, Shoshi Shnagach Nochi Patru, which is that what we learned in our Mishnah, Shalem. Okay. Seems to be again what that symmetry. So the altar was fantastic, just amazing, everything. But all these things that seemed to like asymmetrical. They found it very difficult to understand. However, it says, "B'davar ain anu modim l'malchut." But don't worry, they were saying to him, "Your secret is safe with us." Okay. In other words, there's a few complaints we have, but overall, it's a pretty impressive picture. But we're going to keep that. We're going to keep that to ourselves. Nonetheless, afilu ken lomatun l'sumaya kulan. But nonetheless, there was if like Misiata Dishmaya before they even got to the rocky areas of Tzur, then we say that they forgot it all. You know, Misiata Dishmaya in any event looked after Am Yisrael because they were pretty precarious at the time. It had that to being compromised. Now, a lot of these sugyas of asymmetry, I think Meiris talks about the fact that it's not talking about Goyim now, it's talking about, well, it's in his time, obviously, but like Mamash of the Avodah Zarah, they were absolutely corrupt, believed in all manners of idol worship and pagan ideas and things like that. But so that's a, if you like a sugya maybe for another time. Okay, so that, but that's a story. Let's learn. This is now halacha dalit. So a shor that belongs to pikeach, the god a shor that belongs to a cheresh shot of a katan. Well, he'd be chai because damage. Okay, importantly, we're talking about the owners of that. Yafet. However, if you continue, shor shecheresh shof v'katan, let's say it belonged to a cheresh shof v'katan. So it could be, for example, cheresh, the person had an injury or something. Shnagach shel shor shepikach, in that situation, it's pator. So let's have a look at the Marfolda. He says, Mefarash bebavli she'ein mamid apotropos latam legavot migufo. Aval l'shor mu'ad mamidin. Meaning, if the shor is a tam, we don't now put some sort of trustee or whatever it is, apotropos, to now be put in place to collect the funds. But if it was a mu'ad, you do. What's it even in time and a mu'ad? Because if it's a mu'ad, then you can collect it from, let's call it the estate. So therefore, you can put a apotropos to collect it from the land that was left to the atonement. Okay. However, aval tam, that's it. That was only if it's a mu'ad. Aval tam, they're meant to collect the funds from the gufo of the animal, not from karaka. So therefore, havalei metalten shel yotamim. And since it's a metaltalin and you're trying to take money from movable objects, we know that they don't institute an apotropos, or a caretaker, whatever it is, to in order to collect funds from a talthin of a yatom. So in other words, if you're collecting from their general assets from the land, fine, we can have apotropos. But kesef hatam, which is what the Mishnah is referring to in the beginning, well, if again an ox of a kereshot of a katan, or he said katan like it would be a yatom, because how else would he have assets? Then we don't have many apotropos to collect. That's why it's patur. Fine. The Mara then continues. Misha, sorry. Nipakach. Let's go. Shor cheresh shot of a katan. Shenach. What if a shor cheresh of shenachu? Then ma'amidim la'apotropos. You get an apotropos. Umidim lefem bibne apotropos. Okay. Now it sounds like you do have apotropos, and you then what you do in that situation, you testify in front of it, so it can effectively become a moed if you have this apotropos in like in charge to look after it. However, nitpakach a cheresh nishtapa hashoita katan. If ever the status change of a chereshot of a katan, deaf mute, imbecile, or katan, they actually become a bar das, adult and fully mentally sound, then what's a din? According to Rabbi Meir, chazal tamuto, it becomes a tam again. Rabbi Yossi says, no, this animal's already been established as being a muad, so why should it change? Okay. In other words, is the shinri reshut enough to change the nature of the animal or not? We'll get to that in a second. The final thing the Mishnah mentions is shorai stadim. This is like a bullfighting bull or an ox that has been trained to be in like gladiator rings or whatever it is, like a wildly trained animal specifically engineered for that purpose. We say in that situation, enu chayv mita, you wouldn't kill such an ox if it killed. Shneamar ki gach shor v'lo sheyagchu. In other words, when do we kill an ox for like killing a person? That's if it of its own accord went and killed, but not if it's been conditioned and trained in a robotic manner to be a killing animal. Okay, it wouldn't be killed in that way. Okay, fine.
Even though it's still dangerous.
For sure, it's dangerous, and the person responsible says that. But in other words, the Torah that we were saying is, yeah, it's a dangerous animal. It's been trained and conditioned that way. That's the ki gach shor. Not it says v'kiach shor et ish o isha v'met sakol yisakel. Now, it might be other reasons why you might want to kill this animal. Because, for example, the other Mishnah talk about having a dangerous dog in one's property, or there's other things that might want to deal with this dangerous animal. But not for the din of killing a person. No, but that's a separate little altogether. Okay. Let's continue. Now, shor shapikeach. So the Gemara says, "Kainim anin shor shel cheresh shor shor shoter v'shor shel katan." Now, interesting, the way the Marfold explains it here, we're talking about it's clearly referring to the shor that belongs to a cheresh, not a shor that is a cheresh. Okay, that may have been straightforward, but that's how it says. Vataninan. Says Vataninan, shor cheresh shot of a katan shenaku madim apotropos, medim lifnei apotropos. Now, why the different ways to read this line? Again, we'll commit to the Marafulda. He explains kasagad out of a time mairi, then continuation where it says ma'amidin apotropos. The havamina there is we're still dealing with a tam. But in the beginning we said if a tam of a cheresh shot of a katan does damage, well then you don't. But sefer. That's why it seems to be a contradiction. The sefer that says talk about ma'adim apotropos seems to contradict the ratio. They're completely patur. So the way the Marafuda explains, the Gemara didn't even bother giving an answer because it's not even a kasha. Because if you remember that part, again, according to the Marafuda, is referring to a muad. Ma'adim apotropos, you can get apotropos to claim the funds when it's a muad because that you're taking from their property. However, when you're not mamin apotropos, that's when it's a tam, because a tam comes migufo, and you don't mamin apotropos taken from the metaltlin of the atom. That's how we explain the Mishnah. Yafeh. Now the Gemara says, Ah, kadun b'shehu ado, lifnei habalim, umasrum la'apotropos. In other words, Ah, kadun, meaning, ad hashta, lo shamina matnitin, ela shehu ad bifnei habalim in tcharesh. Or, umasrum la'shor li'ad apotropos, meaning it was already a muad before the situations changed, the person became a cheresh. And that's why it says Lo liyara putropos. However, im huad biyara putropos umasrum lebalin, and you give back to the balim shnit pakeach after cheresh. Mau im maidin lefanav. Would you now treat it, if you like a muad? What's the status now when it goes back? Okay, so in other words, if it was a original muad, clearly it would retain its status. What if we got more in the hands and possession of this Apotropos? The Gemara now says, Nishminahada looking for the following. Just do a little bit more. Sha'alu b'chesk'at shuhu. Sha'alu. You rent this out. Now, again, the Pnei Moshe and our Fulda have different readings of this, but again, we'll just go with my Fulda. It says, Sha'alu, you let this animal out b'chesk'at shuhu tam. With the assumption this animal is a tam. V'nimtza mu'ad. And the borrower thought he had a placid animal. Really, that's a nutty, crazy animal. That's a mu'ad. It caused damage. It was a violent animal. And it caused damage. The Baalim have to pay chetzi nezek, and the shul pays chetzi nezek. Okay, so let's have a look at the Marafulda. He says, "Nitirutot tam miat kibel that he, why does the shul have to pay chetzi nezek? Because he's responsible for chetzi nezek. So what he accepted. And because the Baalim didn't let him know, they paid the other chetzi nezek for that to fit the bill. So because it's now chayv to mesek shalem. However, siam b'seifa, the seifa." Meaning the end of this says, Hu'ad b'beit shoel, if it becomes a mu'ad in the house of the shoel, v'chziru l'balim, it's returned back to the balim, then the balim misham l'chatzin nezek, v'shoel patur miklum. Ah. Well, isn't a mu'ad? It became mu'ad in the property of the shoel, the person who borrowed it. Now it's been returned. If you assume it's still a mu'ad, there has to be full compensation coming from somewhere. So the fact that only half compensation is paid, shmamina, who ad bebet apotropos, even if it's in the hand of another third party and it becomes a muad, ein manin lafne baalim, you don't me'id bifne baalim, if in other words, it doesn't become a muad for the baalim. Dimlokin, if it wasn't the case, it was in front of the baalim, meaning it become a muad, it should be muad when it's returned back. But tam despiru le rushut mishnah, and the reason is, because an animal, if it's under different care, different owners, its nature can change. Okay? The ratio that, in other words, if we've gone back to the original owner, it might be wild in the hands of this shoel, it comes back, it could be normal again. The ratio that tani kushu ad bebeit balim umasrum la shoel. In the ratio when it says became, it was hu ad bebeit balim. So the ratio must be when it became a muad in the umasrum la shoel. What b'meshalem b'oto negicha nezek shalem moki lak Rabbi Yossi the sphere le'arei b'cheskato, and the ratio must be like Rabbi Yossi that a change of reshut doesn't change anything. So in other words, see the ratio and the sefer. I mean, the ratio seems to be like Rabbi Yossi, and the sefer seems to be like the other shita. Right? V'achinami moki le'bavli. It's a guy the Bavli explains it because Rabbi Yochanan says there's no way to understand that whole case of a shoel because it has to be tavra mishnazu loshanazu. The sefer seems to suggest that the shin reshut changes it back to a tam. But the Sefer, which seems to suggest when it go if it was already a muad and is lent to the shoel, that they both have to pay the full amount, well, shared really, because he wasn't aware of it that he had to pay the full amount. Well, it's still a muad. I mean, must be Rabbi Yossi. As it says, Am Rabbi Yossi, the Rabbi Yossi, right? One second. Well, don't worry, we'll continue from here really tomorrow. Otherwise, we're going to go too far.
Is that the Shinui Reshut is legal Reshut or physical Reshut?
Well, whoever's care it's in, I assume.
And who's responsible for it?
I assume so.
So it's legal Reshut.
Well, the case of an apotropos is not ownership. An apotropos is someone just looking after it.
Not responsible for it?
No, he's responsible for it. He's a chay b'shmira. He's looking after it. Like so a shoel. Still belongs to the original owner, the person who borrowed it.
So the animal's fate depends on a legal reality as opposed to a physical reality.
Well, it's a machloka, meaning...
Well, the side that says...
The machloka. Well, but you can see that sometimes. You can have an animal that under one person's care can be crazy and another person's care can be... It can be act differently. That's his opinion. That's it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Shkoyach.
Gotcha.